Okay, hi everybody, and good afternoon from here. I'm sorry I could not. Oh, there we go. Now you see more than you do more than hear, right? Okay. I'm sorry I couldn't be with you this morning for the Science of Triangles webinar, but everything seems to be ironed out now, and I guess we're mixing real time with these programs on a treatise on white magic, which are not related to time. If the image here looks a little bit dark in the afternoon here, the light is coming in very brightly, and we're still in the midst of this amazing European heat wave of 2018. The record for Europe may be broken soon. So we'll have to work hard, all of us as disciples, during this next 18, well, during from 2018 to 2025, 7 years, we'll have to work very hard internally to help keep things livable on our planet. Well, here we are, rule 10. All right, this is the big rule, and well over 100 pages, at least in the book, as I'm recalling, it's something like, let's see, just for fun, from 271, let's see what we have here, just for fun, okay, Control F, huh, well, maybe it's not going to work for me quite this way. Yes, rule 11, 445, okay, that's rule 11, 445, and now we'll go back to rule 10, which is, first time it's mentioned, okay, second time it's mentioned, 271, 445, in the book, it's about, what we have there, 170 pages or something like that, at least 150 pages. So we have a big job ahead of us. So let's at least get started on this. And, okay, there we are. As the waters bathe the form created, they are absorbed and used. The form increases in its strength. Let the magician thus continue until the work sufficeth or suffices. Let the outer builders cease their labors then, and let the inner workers enter on their cycle. Okay, that is the rule. About which he chose to elaborate very fully. And he chose then to deal with thought form building, the centers, energies, and rays, a huge subject, which he elaborated later, you know, in the treatise on the seven rays, astral energy and fear, a very important section for us when beset by negative energies and entities, the right use of energy, the present age and the future, the founding of the hierarchy in ancient days. Maybe we'll be talking there about the Temple of Ibez, the new group of world servers. And you think this was written here, you know, really in the early 30s. So already plans were underway, probably from the year 1925, when the hierarchy was reorganized in such a way that many ashrams could move into the cosmic ethers and off the higher mental plane. And then this huge subject, later elaborated in his excellent and most occult book, he says, Esoteric Astrology. So the section on astrology and the energies. Okay, so let's proceed. Thought form building. We're always being creative, in fact, whether we are conscious or unconscious of this creativity. In Rule 10, two facts about the form are stated, which are true of all forms, and three injunctions are given in the following terms. So he breaks the rule down for us in more direct language. The facts are, the form absorbs and uses the waters in which it is immersed. Now, you know, presumably the form was first detected through contact with the soul, at least with the white magician, and has grown upon the mental plane and thence descended into the astral and eventually etheric physical planes. Number two, as a result, it grows in strength. So the astral waters are feeding the form, and we can imagine they are fed with that element of desire and the tendency towards manifestation, the tendency to appear. Three injunctions. The three injunctions are, let the magician go on building his form until its adequate potency is assured. Without adequate potency, there will be a disruption in the birth of the form, perhaps a stillbirth, perhaps no sufficiency of desire to make sure that it manifests at all upon the etheric and especially physical plane. Then let the outer builders cease their labor, and let, number three, let the inner builders enter on their cycle. So all of these things will be discussed as we go along here. We have seen how, in the process of thought form building, the time came when the form had to be oriented in the right direction and set upon the proper path in order to carry out its creator's will and purpose, the white magical path accords with the divine plan of the, let's say, planetary logos in this case, or higher. But at least we are dealing with, at least we are dealing with the according of the form and its direction with a higher will and intent, which is divine. As for other types who seek to set their form upon a selfish path, well, the result is entirely different and runs afoul of the divine plan. So this setting of the form in the proper direction takes place fairly early in the work. And after the process of orientation, the work of building proceeds, for the thought form is not yet ready for an independent life. I mean, we see this in, well, we see this partially in the human gestation process. There's so much that goes on before the form of the infant can emerge and be viable. Lately, there's been the possibility of saving these forms and making them viable at a very premature state, but this has to do with the science and art of medicine, and of course, in a way, is not natural, although I think highly desirable. In the old days, it just didn't happen. There is a true analogy between the. Oh, you know, I'm maybe it's, I'm remembering how it was when I've read this book, but it often seems that I'm not looking ahead and talking about a subject, and then find that in the very next sentence or two, DK is talking about that subject. Better, of course, than I can talk about it. There is a true analogy between the gestation period of an infant and that of a thought form. The importance of the right placement of the child within the womb is never overlooked by a good physician, and where there is analogously a wrong position upon the path to be followed into manifested existence, death and trouble ensue. So he's talking about here the value of right placement before birth, whether of a thought form or a human, an infant. I suppose this is the case for certain animals too. Okay, the analogy is close, as you well know. Birth is preceded by the breaking of the waters in medical parlance. We might call this a kind of Neptunian precursor of the birth process. There's an analogy here. Okay, right. Of the actual birth. And before the thought form brings about the desired results on the physical plane, there comes too a similar reaction. The waters of desire become so potent as to cause precipitation and the consequent appearance of the desired form of expression. This is a very interesting analogy, and there's a sense in which we must feel the breaking of the waters surrounding the thought form. We must learn to feel the so-called breaking of the waters surrounding the thought form which is intended to be born, because this is an important signal. The potency, the sufficient potency, let's just say a sufficient potency to cause precipitation. So do we recognize when that moment comes? There is such a buildup of desire for manifestation that perhaps the nurturing function of the waters completes, and the thought form, the waters break, as it were, and the thought form is impelled onto the physical plane, the etheric plane first, the higher part of the physical plane. I guess we are all participating in this birthing process. We are creators. We are constantly creating. We may not know the methods and the stages of the creation process, but we are constantly in that process and have to learn how, as disciples, to create in such a way that we're actually helping the intention of our, many logoi above us, I suppose you might say, our globe lord, even the lord of the human kingdom, the lord of our chain and of our planet and so forth, eventually the lord of the solar logos. We're helping all that when we are in right alignment, with the original soul intent. So, as a principle, let us simply be sure that what we are creating, as scientifically and eventually artistically as possible, what we are creating is in line with soul intent, because we have reached the soul and have been rightly impressed through right meditative methods. Okay. Let us take the facts and analogies as they stand and study them from the standpoint both of the macrocosm and the microcosm. So we have remembering two facts and three, what did he call them, injunctions. But first the facts and the analogies. Two facts and three injunctions, but first the facts. Okay. Now, we note that the form absorbs and uses the substance wherein it is immersed. This, of course, is a common feature of the forms with which we are familiar. Okay. Our solar system is one of many. Well, you know, trillions. Our solar system is one of many and not the greatest, certainly not as great as Sirius, which is a sacred solar system and aspiring to be so, just as our Earth now aspires to be as Venus is now. It constitutes a fragment of a greater whole. This greater whole formed of seven parts or seven solar systems, and I would say seven major solar systems. Okay, let's see. Let's see, what have I got here? Seven major. Major. Okay, solar systems. The seven solar systems, of which ours is one, as they are called. You know, go to your esoteric astrology book around page 50 or so for a tabulation that makes this clear. This greater whole formed of seven parts or seven solar systems is itself immersed in the waters of space, is born of desire, a much greater desire, of course, and therefore a child of necessity. And what he's saying here is that which is, quote, born of desire is a child of necessity. If, you know, there are cosmic desires. There are great entities who have a desire body, even the great galactic Logoi, you know, and beyond will have a desire sheath. The waters of space, to a certain extent, he might be talking about ethers in one way. In another way, he's talking about the astral substance on very high levels, maybe of the cosmic astral plane. So anyway, greater forms, it draws life, its life from its surroundings, a great form does. Streaming into our solar system from all sides are force currents. What do they look like? Are they directed? Are they spherically emanated? Anyway, emanating from what a treatise on cosmic fire calls the one about whom naught may be said. So view TCF 344 and also 293 for a tabulation there and a much greater chart on 344 and see if you can find the one about whom naught may be said. You know, here in Tuya's new rendition of these things, we find, well, we're supposed to find 2, 3, check this chart out. This is the chart on 344. See if you can find the one about whom, our one about whom not may be said, and why we call it our particular one about whom not may be said. So anyway, these currents embody his will and desire. Now this is a super cosmic logos, our one about whom. And express his love and attractive capacity and manifest as that great thought form we call our system. Now, of course, this is true. Our solar logos manifests his system, and it is a small manifestation within the one about whom. Well, not may be said, and there are a number of these great deities, and they're certainly not the greatest of all by any means. But when comparing what we know of great living beings, it's quite a big one, quite an encompassing one, and really everything that DK talks about and that he kind of specifies regarding our cosmology, anything he gives in any kind of detail, is within this body of manifestation of our local, one about whom not may be said, in which our zodiac of constellations plays such an important part as the heart within the head center of that great being. In parentheses, it is well to note that this existence, maybe this is the first time, well, no, in Cosmic Fire he would have mentioned it. Basically, all the books that followed were kind of a breakout, an elaboration in greater detail of a treatise on cosmic fire. All the psychology books and the books on rays and even this book on magic and so forth, all extensions of information given there in what is called the psychological key to the secret doctrine. Or at least that key as Master DK sought to represent it. So we're into pretty high material here, which without the beneficent generosity of the Master, we'd know nothing about. Think of that, you know, living your life without being able to know some of these things related to our planet, our spiritual hierarchy, our solar system, our local cosmos, all of that given by Master DK and not at this time accessible to us. So in parenthesis, it is well to note that this existence is termed the one about whom not may be said, not because of secrecy or mystery, but because all formulation of ideas about his life and purpose are impossible until one has completed the term of evolution in our solar system. Whoa, that's something. And, you know, let's just say, not just on our planet. And what is that term of evolution? Well, note I said solar system and not just our planetary existence. Well, you know, when do we leave our solar system? It depends on whether we do leave it at all. But I suspect that in almost all cases, we do leave our solar system upon the way of higher evolution. And generally, I would say we have to become a ninth degree initiate in order to venture onto the cosmic astral plane through something called the Great Refusal. And at least for the time being, we refuse to have anything to do with the cosmic astral plane, cosmic physical plane. I hope I said that earlier. We refuse to be involved with the cosmic physical plane, and we learn elsewhere. And then maybe one day in sacrificial service, return as the solar angels have returned to the cosmic physical plane. There was a question there, of course, about how many planes the previous solar system had. We're used to the idea here of having seven planes. But there is the possibility, and I cannot confirm or deny, that the previous major solar system had only five planes, and that the up-and-coming first ray solar system will have nine. In any case, it does appear that contact with the cosmic astral plane is necessary in order to be trained on Sirius, and that the solar angels have been trained on Sirius and have ventured there via the cosmic astral plane. At least that's the speculation of the moment. And in the book, The Rays and the Initiations, he talks about the different paths. I think the second path is reached via the cosmic astral plane, magnetic work, and the fourth path to Sirius via the cosmic astral plane. But the third path of the planetary logoi is reached via the cosmic mental plane, but I don't think you can just jump over the cosmic astral. And the ray path, which is the fifth path, also via the cosmic mental, and the seventh path, the path of absolute sonship, also via the cosmic mental, and the most extensive of the paths is the path of the solar logoi, which is reached via the cosmic buddhic plane. Now, those are just words. What can we know? What can we say? When even Master DK says, look, I can't elaborate for you what is to be found on the cosmic astral plane because I haven't been there. Well, anyway, chances are, though, at least in our solar system, that by the time the ninth initiation is reached, we are free through refusal to enter the cosmic astral plane. And since the solar system is usually regarded as that part of the solar logos which manifests on his cosmic etheric and cosmic generally dense physical plane, we have left, in a sense, the solar system. So maybe we're just not going to know much about this temporarily named one about whom naught may be said until we've taken the ninth initiation. And we, how can we say this? We become a first degree initiate with respect to Sirius when we take mastership. Maybe we become a first degree initiate with respect to the seven solar systems and that logos when we take the seventh initiation. And maybe we become a first degree initiate and maybe can know something about the one about whom not maybe said when we take that ninth initiation, which perhaps is equivalent to his first, the first initiation with regard to him. All of this must necessarily be speculative and maybe almost ludicrous when you think about our present stage of consciousness, but we have been presented certain books and visions in those books which expand our ability to speculate immensely. And so, you know, we can occasionally follow out through the law of analogy, or even more specifically the law of correspondences, certain indications which may tell us about when we would be able to know anything at all about the one about whom naught may be said, our local one about whom. And it seems, I would say, associated with the ninth initiation in our system of initiations. Okay, so anyway, DK is saying we can't know anything about his life, really. It's impossible. Can't formulate any accurate ideas until we have completed the term of evolution in our solar system. Now, a planetary logos completing a term of evolution in our solar system is a completely different thing. We, members of the fourth creative hierarchy, can transcend the human kingdom, the kingdom of planetary lives, and enter into the kingdom of solar lives and all that within our solar system. But it's our evolution within this solar system. Speculation about the existence who, through his life, informs seven solar systems is wasted energy. Well, I guess I've just wasted a little energy. Now, just watch here carefully when a word like solar systems is used. And I just want to say this. It's a blind, possibly. When the word solar systems is used, we might mean a system with a single solar logos at its center, or we might mean a constellation, or even a group of constellations. In other words, the seven solar systems, of which ours is one, that being might be considered to be a solar system because it is comprised of solar logos. Even within the constellations of the one about whom naught may be said, they are these constellations are composed of solar logoi. So, in fact, watch out for the blinding. Okay, at least this is my impression. Watch the possible blinding effect of the use of such a term as solar systems. Anyway, we've just wasted a little energy, perhaps, in speculating about these things, but as long as the speculation holds good, as far as we can see, to the law of analogy, we might be allowed a little fugue, a little flight of imagination, so we can see relatively where we stand. The Christ is now an initiate of a certain degree with respect to Sirius. Well, as a master, he was a first degree initiate, maybe as a Chohan of the sixth degree, a second degree initiate. And now, since he's working on his seventh initiation in our series of nine, the series of nine presented to the fourth or human creative hierarchy, he may be becoming a transfigured initiate with respect to Sirius. On our planet, only such great lives as the Buddhas, as the Buddha, working on the seventh degree, I guess, the Kumaras, who have really a much higher status in a way because they were planetary logoi in the previous solar system, and the planetary logos, are beginning to sense the dynamic impulse of the greater whole, not the universal whole, but the greater whole that we're calling the system of the one about whom naught may be said, and even they are only sensitive to it, but are as yet utterly unable to conceive of its trend, for it lies beyond mind and love and will. In other words, sometimes D.K. has said, well, you think that mind, love, and will are the three aspects of divinity, and there are three laws accordingly, the law of economy, mind, the law of attraction, love, the law of synthesis, will. But there can be other laws and other factors of which we know absolutely nothing, and maybe they correlate with the rays of aspect, could be. For it lies beyond mind and love and will. Anyway, he certainly, in this little book on controlling the astral body, he's enlarging our point of view, isn't it? Is he not? There's a tremendous difference between our present Buddha and one of the three Buddhas of activity. Probably, I mean, who can say, but many Mahamanvantaras ago, if the term Mahamanvantara means solar system, as it usually does, it might be a shorter span, as sometimes seems to be indicated. But anyway, many Mahamanvantaras ago, Sanat Kumara, or our planetary logos, was a fifth degree initiate, or comparable to the fifth degree initiates. The Buddha is a sixth degree initiate becoming seventh. So you can begin to see what a great separation there is between the three Buddhas of activity and even such great beings as the Buddha and the Christ. And the planetary logos, well, in one way he's greater than the Kumaras, and in another way, not as great, because they're working under a specific law of sacrifice, though he is called the great sacrifice as well. He seems to embody more of the quality of love wisdom than they do, because they are more in line with intelligence and upheld that factor of intelligence in the previous major solar system. You know, we talk about these things, but how would we even have the vocabulary to talk about them if Master DK had not, with amazing generosity, given this kind of thing to us? Of course, it had to be under the permission of Master KH, and that under the permission of the Christ, and that under the permission of Sanat Kumara, who probably, as an emanation of the planetary logos, is most aware of what the divine plan for this planetary scheme is, more so than any of the emanations of the planetary logos. Anyway, we talk about the one about whom naught may be said. It's a bit of a joke. And but it's pretty clear that he is shown, or it is shown, on the maps, on the charts, and some little understanding of the position of certain beings within that great being is definitely given, or at least hinted at, in the teaching. So on our lives, only such great lives as the Buddha, the Kumaras, and the planetary logos are beginning to sense the dynamic impulse of the greater whole. Which, and I want to say here, which is not the universal whole, but the body of expression of our one about whom. And even they are only sensitive to it, but are as yet utterly unable to conceive of its trend, for it lies beyond the mind and love and will. Now, you know, if we can just get some little idea of how great are the systems in which we live and move and have our being, of which our galactic system, impossible to deal with in any cogent way, is simply a mite with the billions of galaxies existing. Maybe, and I speak to myself, we will relax and, but not lose our point of attention, of course, and get on with the process. Because what a great opportunity we have, and yet we are that divine whole as well, and we are repeating through infinitudinous universes something of this process, but always with a different creative theme. So anyway, beyond mind, love, and will, who knows? Let us say, who knows? How about being able to do that? Who knows what are the divine aspects which are not named for us, and the cosmic laws related to them? Well, you know, we do get some systemic laws, don't we? And even they are way beyond us. We've got three cosmic laws of synthesis, attraction, and repulsion, and economy. And we've got seven systemic laws far beyond us. Now, what if we were to fill out somehow the seven cosmic laws and still a higher three beyond those seven, and so forth, you know. So those seven laws wherever are they listed? Let's just take a look for fun. Let's see. So this would be the law of cohesion. And law of cohesion, let's just try that, you know. And maybe there's going to be a list of all those other laws. There it is. So the very first law of vibration, law of cohesion, correlate these with the rays. Law of disintegration, law of magnetic control. Law of fixation, fifth ray, law of love. In this case, sixth ray, law of sacrifice and death, seventh ray. And, you know, maybe there are three above in the next system of seven and so forth. Because we are only at the very beginning of being able to apply the law of analogy to the extension of the ever greater universe, at least ever greater in terms of our perception, even our extended perception. We have fantastic extended perception through astrophysics and astronomy, but in terms of the internality of these things, we don't have that kind of understanding at all. We, you know, barely know what's going on the astral and mental planes, right down here in the dense physical body of our planetary logos and our solar logos. So the rest is mental. But one day to be filled in by experience. It's astonishing the scope that's being offered here. It brings into play factors for which we have no terms and tendencies which are not yet even remotely visioned on our planet, and I suppose by even the greater beings. Remember, we have a non-sacred planet here on which we are developing, and you just kind of wonder, you know, to what extent it's asking me to save, you know. Pretty big file here, and I would like to save. It's, you kind of wonder how far any being on our planet can see, how far our planetary logos can see into the nature of the one about whom not may be said, if the Kumaras themselves and our planetary. Well, the Kumaras themselves are limited. Our planetary logos appears to be limited. Maybe the sacred planetary logoi are limited, but not so limited. And maybe the solar logos, who is actually kind of a minor center, I suppose, within this one about whom not may be said, maybe kind of a heart center within a solar plexus center. Perhaps our seven solar systems, these seven solar systems of which ours is one, is a kind of a great solar plexus center within this one about whom not may be said. Anyway, even our little solar system and its solar logos, quite minor, really, within that being quite a minor center. Moving on here and understanding the tremendous scope of these great beings, and here, even in a relatively early book, he enlarges upon the inaccessibility of this one about whom not may be said. Yet it is a practical book, and we will continue. We have generated a term we call the ether. It's interesting that science of the period, maybe closer to the year 1900, determined that the ether was no longer necessary. It was no longer necessary to think in terms of the reality of an ether, but I think the ether will make its reappearance. Occultly speaking, this is the modern way of expressing the waters of space, which are the waters of desire in which we are immersed. Now, this is kind of interesting because he seems to equate the spatial waters with spatial desire. So, he seems to equate the ethers, which are usually distinguished from the substance of desire with the substance of desire. Occultly speaking, this is the modern way of expressing the waters of space. So there's more, maybe there, the waters of space exist in certain divisions, some of which are etheric, some of which have to do with the energy of desire and maybe the desire of mind. Maybe that's all, or see the quality of mind. Maybe that's all part of the waters of space. So anyway, repeating, we have generated a term we call the ether. Occultly speaking, this is the modern way of expressing the waters of space, which are the waters of desire in which we are immersed. And we are also immersed in the general etheric body of space, which is a kind of matter which is of greater density than desire matter. It is in constant ebb and flux, these waters of space. Let's think of them as the waters of desire, because that is the way he is correlating these large ideas with this Rule 10 and what it says, how these waters are absorbed and used. It is in constant ebb and flux and is the stream of life constituted of 49 types of energy. Okay, well, that's what I thought. These waters of space have many divisions, so that makes more sense. These waters of space have many divisions. And, well, let's see what he says further, because even any astral plane has seven divisions, or even 49 divisions if we consider sub planes. So it is in constant ebb and flux, you know, withdrawing and flowing, and is the stream of life constituted of 49 types of energy. Now, from a certain perspective, we might look at the entire cosmic physical plane and consider all of that to be the waters of space. Sometimes water and matter are considered as equivalent terms. So 49 types of energy which pour through the cosmic egoic lotus, and radiating forth from it, feeds with its measure of sustenance the form, solar, planetary, or human, for which it is responsible. And this is dealt with in treatise on cosmic fire. So I think what we begin to see with a statement like this is how extensive is the term waters of space, because it's not only cosmic desire, but also the kind of sustaining energy which sustains solar egoic lotus on the cosmic mental plane. So maybe we just have to consider the term ethers in a general way, the way we consider and consider waters in a general way, and water can mean matter. And maybe we have to, if water can mean matter, as DK suggests that it can, then we have to think that maybe the cosmic planes themselves are in some very, very refined way material. And that is always a question that I've been asking here. When we get off the cosmic physical plane, are we dealing with any kind of atomic structure? The smallest constituent of which we are aware on the cosmic physical plane, cosmic physical plane, and which has been presented in occult chemistry and maybe in first principles of theosophy by Jinnara Jadasa, is the so-called bubble in the koilon. And that's such a tiny unit, but maybe there are still tinier units. Anyway, something like 14, I hope I get this correct, something like 14 billion of them. It's not trillion, I know that. Is it million? Well, 14 billion or million of them make up the single etheric atom of man. So those are the tiniest constituents. Now, when we get into the higher waters of space, do we have comparable tiny units to make up any kind of atoms found on cosmic planes? That's not discussed yet, and we just don't know. But anyway, repeating what DK says, occultly speaking, we have a term called the ether, and occultly speaking, this is a modern way of expressing the waters of space. Now, the ethers, or ether, cosmic ether, as he discusses it in esoteric astrology, is in a way like space itself and extends throughout the universe, and I suppose in various grades. I would say, from what's said here, it includes the waters of desire in which we are immersed, and those waters of desire are divided. But it also has greater and higher extensions, and if it can pour through the cosmic egoic lotus, then it is of a nature which is higher than the desire of the cosmic astral plane, because the cosmic egoic lotus, well, even the solar logos has an egoic lotus on a still higher plane. Now, I just began to look at this when he says cosmic egoic lotus. What is that? Is that of our solar logos, or is it something still greater? In any way, this whole approach here argues for an extension of the term waters of space. So, man is immersed in forces which are to him as the waters of space are to our solar system. So here, he's confining it to our solar system, even though he uses the word cosmic. Sometimes our solar locus is considered a cosmic being, and sometimes a systemic being. So he carries on the analogy, man is immersed in these forces, and also the thought forms which he creates are immersed in etheric forces in a general sense, and desire forces more specifically in this discussion. Man is immersed in forces which are to him as the waters of space are to the solar system. Okay, maybe we get the analogy. And, there is a waxing, a growing, a strengthening as these waters of space are absorbed by the form. Or let's just say as these waters, and sometimes they're of space, but sometimes they're much more confined, as the form uses these and absorbs them, it is strengthened. So he finds himself, as does our sun and its attendant planets. Now, you know, before you can be a solar logos, it begins to look like you've got to be an attendant planet obeying the will of the solar logos. And the ashram, you know, the master is like the sun, and the various members of the ashram are like attendant planets, with some of them being more sacred than others. He finds himself, as does our sun and its attendant planets, forming part of a whole, and just as our system is but one of seven systems, and I want to say again, seven major systems, you know, because there can be more solar systems within that seven solar systems, of which ours is one, than just seven majors. You know, you look at the Great Bear, it's got, what does it have, about like 144 stars in it? Something like that. And only seven of them or so, maybe eight, are considered to be actually major. So it's got a lot of lesser solar logoi in it. So when we talk about any system that's got seven, that is sevenfold, it has seven majors, but maybe a lot of minors. When you look at the chakra system of man, it's got seven majors, but a lot of minor and minute centers. So anyway, man, and you know, we're interested in what man is doing here. This is the analogy. He finds himself, as does our sun and its attendant planets, forming part of a whole, and just as our sun is but one of seven systems, seven major ones, drawn together to form the body or manifested expression of a life, I want to call it a lesser one about whom naught may be said, a cosmic logos, and not a super, super cosmic logos. So is the human kingdom, of which he is an infinitesimal part, well, a tiny part anyway, one of seven kingdoms. We've got to get our numbers straight here, and remember that as we were reading recently, DK is asking us to think in terms of numbers, and yes, especially numbers and of chakras and those kinds of foundational structures. So, in the human kingdom, of which he is an infinitesimal part, it's one of seven kingdoms. These are the correspondences in the life of the planetary logos to the seven solar systems, the kingdoms of nature, we might say. The kingdoms of nature. When he begins to sense the life of the solar logos as it expresses itself through the seven planetary schemes, that's seven major, you know, we have a lot of others, and at one point DK even tells us we've got 115 different, it looks like, planetary schemes going on in our solar system, not just seven. But it's interesting that 115 does add up to seven. When he begins to sense the life of the solar logos as it expresses itself through the seven planetary schemes, we will have touched the consciousness of the planetary logos of our special scheme. Well, we're a long way from that, aren't we? Our special scheme. Yeah, right. Who is sensing somewhat the united vibrations of the lives of the seven solar logos. So our planetary logos is only so far advanced that he can begin to sense the lives of the seven solar systems, of which ours is one. I mean, sometimes we think that a planetary god has an immense reach, but it is limited. So we have to reach a point, and when he begins to sense the life of the solar logos, and when is that? Let's say at the seventh initiation, which is kind of a second ray initiation, and somehow involved for the solar logos, as it expresses itself through the seven planetary schemes, we will have touched the consciousness of our planetary logos, of our special scheme. Now, maybe before this, we touch something of the consciousness of Sanat Kumara, who is an extension of the planetary logos. You know, in one way, Sanat Kumara is the planetary logos. In another way, he is not the planetary logos. Well, this is a detailed and interesting material, and we haven't gotten very far in this particular. We've started with thought form building. So what I'm going to do is to pull down, let's see, I guess we ended on 271. And let's see how far we've gotten here. Right here. Well, he's going to bring it down still closer to the human kingdom. I'm glad he's going to do that. And the next time we talk about this, we will discuss it accordingly. So this is the end of number 17, and let's call it 9.5, and it's 271 to 275. Not so many pages, but it's a deep material, and we just have to be able to work with it. And we'll begin with 275 next time, and who knows what day that will be. We'll just see when we can do it. And it'll be program number 18. I'm just filling this in for law of economy. And it'll be 10. Oh, excuse me. That's wrong. It's not 9.5. It's 10.1. And now we start with 10.2. Yeah, we're done with nines. Of course, I'm glad I picked that up. And we'll see what day of August we are able to continue this. Okay. Well, friends, we all have to think carefully together. This is a book about how to manage our discipleship, but DK has seen fit to continue to expand our consciousness in ways that we might not suspect in a book about the normal methods of discipleship. He really wants us to learn according to the law of analogy. He wants us to have the analogy of absorbing from the waters of space a strengthening energy. He uses that analogy to bring in greater beings who also are absorbing strength from the ethers, the waters of space. And he's letting us know how extensive are these waters of space. So we've just begun, and we've learned that there are about, as I recall, 170 pages, something like that, in a treatise on white magic, as that pagination goes, in this particular book. So let's let it go now, and we will carry on with program number 18, which deals with the second program of the 10th amazing rule, and beginning with page 275. Lots of love. We'll see you later. And all the best.